take over 154A, please. Andy?
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 154 is a measure, Senate Bill 154A is a measure that would qualify dwelling units that are run as self-run group recovery homes that have shared living facilities as drug and alcohol free housing under the Landlord-Tenant Act.
Great. Thank you. John Van Landingham, Frank Wall, and Patty O'Sullivan. Sybil, you're not speaking today?
John speaks for me.
Oh.
Like the formality, but it works, isn't it?
I apologize for the lack of committee here. Things get sort of tied up toward the end of session, but I'm sure they will be trickling in.
Madam Chair, my name is John Van Landingham. I work as a legal aid lawyer in Lane County. And I'm here on behalf of a group of people that negotiated Senate Bill 154A. I won't go into great detail since it's just the one of you. This is an issue that really involves an organization called Oxford House. Frank Wall represents Oxford House. It's a national program that creates group recovery homes for people who are in alcohol or drug addictions. DHS, that Patty Sullivan represents, has been a big proponent of Oxford Houses. They've been very successful at helping people stay in recovery. Oxford House's dilemma, and the reason this bill is here, is because Oxford House's model is that people who are in recovery and who relapse need to be removed from the house quickly in order to encourage them to get back into recovery and also not to tempt the other people in the house by drinking or using drugs in their presence. The Oxford House model usually has between 5 and 8 adults sharing a home in a single-family neighborhood. And the model allows the members, or requires actually the members, to, by Democratic vote, decide to remove somebody who relapses. Removing a tenant from a rental unit without going to court is something that legal aid lawyers have a great deal of difficulty with, and it's one of the basic premises of the Landlord-Tenant Act adopted in 1973 by this legislature. It does not allow that. So we have a basic conflict between the Oxford House model, which is to get somebody in relapse who's relapsed out of the house quickly, and the legal aid view and the Landlord-Tenant Act view that, no, you've got to go to court to get somebody out to test whether it's fair and right to remove somebody. There's not an easy mesh between those two positions, and so we ended up with litigation. And legal aid ended up representing a tenant who had been removed summarily by an Oxford House program. Frank defended the Oxford House program. The trial court ruled that they were covered by the Landlord-Tenant Act. They had to go through the process. Court of Appeals ruled, no, they're not covered by the Landlord-Tenant Act. They don't have to go through the eviction process. The Supreme Court then ruled, yes, they are covered. So we've gone back and forth. DHS submitted Senate Bill 154 to try to resolve this issue to allow them to remove people quickly. We ended up negotiating further. We actually started negotiations last August. We didn't really get very far. We went through more intense negotiations after the bill started in the Senate. I can't believe that. Sorry.
I didn't make my announcement, did I?
Please no one ever calls
cell phones. And your Blackberries, and please turn them off completely, not just the no ringing, because it affects the sound system.
I'm sorry, that's the second time this happened to me in the session. I should learn. So we went through further negotiations, and the bill that passed the Senate side really is the legal aid position. But we recognize that we need to do something that makes this situation work for Oxford House. And so with Patty's influence, after she was brought in by DHS, we have gone back to the negotiating table and have offered a compromise which allows Oxford House to lock tenants out if they've relapsed, but only for actual observation of actual use or possession, a failed drug test, or the refusal to take a drug test, an elaborate requirement for a written notice that advises people why they're being locked out, and then creating a summary process so that the locked out tenant can get into court quickly to challenge that if he or she wants to, and a damages remedy that says that if Oxford House does this wrongfully or in bad faith, Oxford House will owe the wrongfully removed tenant three times the rent, or and has to allow the tenant back into the house. So it's a true compromise in the sense that we're letting Oxford House lock people out, which is something that legal aid lawyers don't like. But we think we've built in some guarantees to limit that risk and to provide a remedy if the Oxford House does abuse it. And my co-participants are here, hopefully, to say good bills should pass.
Thank you, Mr. Van Landingham. And since we have the majority of the members today, I will call to order the full committee on Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Department of Human Services, and this is a good bill, and it should pass. DHS has a couple of interests in this. One is Oxford Houses are a very viable part of our community of recovery for addicts, and although we do not regulate them in any way, they are kind of a standalone program. We're, of course, always interested in all of the people in recovery. So, plus, the other issue is that our CAF program, Children and Families, has some foster children that have been reunited with their parents, mostly moms, that are in some Oxford Houses. And so we, as a part of them being able to reunite with their children, of course, they are supposed to be in a drug and alcohol-free environment. And so if somebody else in the house is using, that jeopardizes them and puts them at risk of losing their children again. So we have a vested interest in this bill in that way. But, of course, we really like the due process part. So we're in favor of the amendments, and I want to thank everybody that works so hard on them.
Thank you, Ms. O'Sullivan. Any questions of these first two witnesses before we move on to a third? Okay, Mr. Wall.
Okay, I'm Frank Wall. I'm an attorney. I practice in Portland. I have represented Oxford House through much of the court process and have been involved in the work groups leading up to this bill. A couple things I wanted to add to what John said. When Oxford House locks somebody out using the procedures which we have in the bill, it's not the people, the Oxford House people themselves throwing somebody out on the street, because that's potentially a dangerous situation. What we require in the bill is that a peace officer actually remove somebody, not the Oxford House participants. It's necessary for Oxford House to be able to remove somebody quickly, not only as a deterrent so that people in the house don't drink, but also because we have a responsibility to the other folks in the house. People that are in recovery, their recovery and their sobriety can be easily threatened by someone else drinking or using near them. These are triggering events that can cause relapse. So it's important to be able to remove somebody, because their using in the house can affect everybody and bring a whole house down. I think this is a good bill. It's a compromise between Oxford House's need to protect its members and also provide due process protections for the people that are being asked to leave. I think it's good, and it should be passed.
Thank you, Mr. Wall. Any questions of any of these witnesses?
Madam Chair, give E for any of you, but Patty, you and I have already talked about this a little bit. The whole idea of the 24 hours is kind of patterned a little bit after the 24-hour outrageous behavior for eviction, isn't it?
That's correct.
So, yeah, that was good. I just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you.
Good job. Anything else? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who would like to speak on this bill? All right. I would entertain a motion to pass the dash 9 amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd move that we accept the dash 9s to the Senate bill.
Representative Olson moves the dash 9 A9s to the Senate Bill 154. Any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I was a few minutes late, so I might have missed this. The support on the Senate side for concurrence
on the
amendments?
Sybil, are you coming up? Somebody's coming up?
I'm just curious where the Senate is on this.
I can tell you that I've had some discussion with Senator Lori Montes Anderson regarding it for this, and they do like where that's going. There might be just a little bit of opposition, but I this is a good package.
Oh, I absolutely agree, and I would hope that we have no problems when it goes back over there. I don't know if there's any.
I can speak to that, Chair.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, and I've been a part of these negotiations and worked on the bill on the Senate side. Since we came to the compromise, I've followed up with Chair Mattis Anderson as well as Senator Gordley and John Christensen in Senator Carter's office, and so all three of those members have the information about what the compromise is and have expressed their support and appreciation of the focus on those two dual interests. So I hope
that's a
good harbinger.
Thank you. Thank you, Sybil. Thanks for all your work on this. Thanks for all of you who've worked hard on this. I know it was a very, very difficult issue. Good compromise. Great product. Thank you very much. Okay. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 154 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 154.
I'll do it officially.
Again.
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move that the dash nines amendments be moved into Senate Bill 154.
Representative Olson moves the dash nines to Senate Bill 154. Any discussion? Any question? Anybody opposed? All right. Dash nines. Adopted to Senate Bill 154.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 154, as amended, be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves Senate Bill 154 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you take the roll, please?
Representative Dillon?
Aye.
Excused.
Representative
Gillian?
Aye.
Representative
Kozak?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. Senate Bill 154, as amended, has passed, and it goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Cowan, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Great. Yes, very, very good work.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 865. Okay. Welcome. Did you want to vote on that last bill?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes, I would love to. Which one was it?
How do we go about doing this?
You have to reopen the work session.
Okay, reopen the work session.
Is that a residential program?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a big amendment. Did you read the dash 9 amendment?
I did last night.
Okay. I'm going to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 154A. Representative Gelser, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Gelser votes. It doesn't change the passing of this, and it goes on to the floor. Thank you. Okay, and Representative Cowan, you've agreed to carry this?
I do, yes.
Great, wonderful. Okay, I will open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 865A. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 865A is a measure that would require the Department of Human Services to seek approval of a federal waiver and federal funding to disregard the amount of annual cost of living adjustments for Social Security and supplemental security income benefits in determining food stamp benefits. It would require DHS to submit a waiver request by October 1st of 2007 and to renew the application annually.
Thank you, Andy. And we have somebody here who would like to testify, maybe two somebodies. All right. Ryan Tribbett, am I saying that correctly, Ryan? Thank you. And John Mullen.
Sure, go ahead. Okay. For the record, my name is Ryan Tribbett, Chief of Staff for Senator Metzger's office. So Senate Bill 865 has to do with people that are on both Social Security and receiving food stamp benefits. Right now, current policy is such that when they get a cost of living adjustment on the Social Security, they actually reduce their food stamp benefit, and this is a vulnerable demographic, almost entirely low-income seniors. And so what 865 does is asks DHS to send a waiver to the USDA asking them to disregard that Social Security adjustment and not reduce that food allocation to those people. So it's pretty simple bill.
Thank you, Ryan. John.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. Just a couple of comments that I wanted to make this morning. First of all, I want to thank Senator Metzger for bringing this bill forward. I don't know how this will be received at the federal level, but I'm really very pleased that Oregon is doing this. And I just want to give the quick perspective in the role that I had prior to working with the Oregon Law Center as Director of Clackamas County Social Services. When January would roll around, it was time for the dreaded January changes that we had to make, where we had to touch every case that had a food stamp case that when there was the increase in the Social Security that would happen for clients, we'd have to go through and touch every case. We'd have to contact clients. There would be lots of anxiety out there. A lot of the clients that we served had cognitive impairments or had other mental health kinds of issues. And so it was extremely difficult, caused a lot of confusion, questions, workload issues. But really the bottom line about this is all about the client. We wound up, in essence, as an agency, being agents of the federal government, giving with one hand and taking away with the other. And it just didn't make sense to clients and to families. And for people who are so very low income and facing other kinds of cost of living increases, this was a way in which people not only didn't get ahead, but they would fall behind, even though it wasn't a dollar-for-dollar give-and-take sort of situation. But still, it's a significant change for somebody who is low income. So, again, I'm really very pleased that this is happening on behalf of low-income people, and we'll hope for the best. If nothing else, it raises the issue at the federal level that this is really a concern, and Oregon is on record as saying we would like to change it.
Thank you, John. Any questions of either Representative Kotek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for bringing this forward after several years of doing food stamp policy work and also on the doorsteps running. I heard this a lot, actually. You know, it's the same. It's that issue for folks on fixed incomes having their food stamps readjusted. Do we have any understanding where in Farm Bill reauthorization this might play? Is there any discussion coming up around this issue? Because it does have a price tag. And I'm just wondering if there's anything at the federal level being discussed.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, that's a great question. And to my knowledge, there's nothing in the Farm Bill discussion that is going on about this particular issue, but it wouldn't be too late to really raise that discussion, at least to make sure that our delegation is aware in Washington, D.C., that this is a concern in Oregon.
Follow up? So, hopefully, you know, we can get this passed quickly. If we could maybe get that information to the delegation, I think it would be important.
And we are actually working on that with Chair Morissette from the Senate side, working on drafting a letter and getting the entire federal delegation involved in it. And back to your previous question, there used to be a cost neutrality requirement with the waivers, and that was actually repealed in the 2002 Farm Bill, and I think that no state is actually... My understanding is no state's actually submitted this type of waiver since that cost neutrality requirement was repealed.
Thank you.
Representative Maurer, did you have a question?
Well, I did. For some people that don't fully understand this, explain to me how this works. And you have a Social Security check. And you get an X percent increase, usually 2-3% maybe. And then you have a food stamp payment over here. And what they do is they offset the 3% increase with a corresponding decrease in your food stamp.
I can go ahead and address that.
Oh, okay, if you want to.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, that's an excellent question. Basically, what happens is just the way you describe it is then the workers that are here in the state of Oregon, whether they're in state offices or, in the case of Clackamas County, they're local employees, basically you would have to go in and adjust every grant. And it was about a $3 to $1 kind of change. In other words, for every $3 increase in Social Security benefits, had to decrease food stamps by $1. So it basically just, again, it was very, very confusing to clients and families and very, very stressful and a big workload issue, I might add.
Follow up.
So these people, you would say that their primary income was that Social Security check?
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, absolutely, yes. And in cases of the clients that we serve, they either had Social Security or SSI supplementals. Social Security income.
Any further questions?
Just a comment. And these households have pretty small amount of food stamps in some cases, especially if they're an older adult, single adult in the household. What's the minimum? What's the average now? It's not very much money to begin with.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, that's correct. It oftentimes is a very small amount of money, and some of the people also with the categorical eligibility of at $10. So, and we always encourage people to even get the categorical amount and showed people how much $10 would actually make a difference in a household. And just one very quick thing on the cost neutrality issue, if I might, is that the whole thing was counterintuitive about having an offset for it at the federal level, because at the same time this discussion was going on, Food and Nutrition Services was concerned about the fact that the food stamp rolls had declined so significantly after welfare reform. And so we were out there doing outreach to try to make sure that people understood that food stamp benefits were available for them. And at the same time, then we go through this change every year with taking food stamps away. So the whole thing was, you know, at the local level was very counterintuitive.
Any further questions? Thank you so much. Thank you. And please give our best to Senator Metzger.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Oh, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 865A and open up a work session on Senate Bill 865A.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd move that Senate Bill 865A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson. Move Senate Bill 865A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm supporting this, but I just wanted to make a comment. I was just sitting here thinking about a waiver bill that we heard early in the session and what is theoretical and what is actual, I think, is important to put on the record. Theoretically, and I think Representative Maurer brought this out, this is how much you get, and if you get more here, then you're going to get less there. But in reality, what somebody from the trenches tells us, for such a small amount of money, it's a nightmare, not just for the clients, but for the government. This is not really a question for discussion, but it seems to me the bigger question is levels of support so that this kind of snafu doesn't happen. I mean, why isn't there in the law so somebody's benefit changes by a few dollars? Why can't the law allow for that and not trigger this kind of us begging for a waiver or making people in the trenches do that? Seems like it would take very little to allow that kind of discretion to happen. So it's just kind of disturbing to me, and I think we do need to act on behalf of people for the waiver, but that's my comment.
Representative Gilliam, I think you're the only one among us who has worked in an office where that kind of action could have happened. Do you have any thoughts about your experience there?
You mean way back? Yeah, we should have done more.
I'll accept that. Any other discussion? All right, Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Allen?
Aye.
Representative
Gilser?
Aye.
Representative
Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Chair Tomei?
Aye.
Senate Bill 865A, having gotten the constitutional majority, is passed and will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who hasn't had to carry a bill lately?
I would really like to carry this.
Oh, right. You go for it. Representative Kotek will carry this bill onto the floor.
Thank you.
Okay. Just a reminder, have a great weekend. I wish everyone remember a three-day weekend. We will have a meeting promptly at 8:30 on Wednesday. And also hold out 8:30 on Thursday. That will be the last day that we will be able to hear bills. And we have a very important bill, as you know, coming up ahead of us. We've got a lot of work.
Is that the only bill on the calendar now?
As far as I know, that's okay. The only bill. So, well, it is absolutely, because they would have had to notice it before this. So So it will be our only bill, so we still have a lot of work to do on that. So plan both of those mornings promptly and come here with your pencil sharpened, and you're going to hear some tough testimony and work hard on this. And we have June 6th, right, for our get-together, and we can talk about that further later. Any other business for the good of the order? It's our last week next week, you guys, and I'm asking the speaker to make sure that our steady... Oh, well, I guess I should ask you that. If anybody has a problem with continuing in this committee during the interim, let me. I don't want to hear it right now. I don't want to hear it at all, but tell me privately. My request to the speaker is that he keep our committee intact during the interim. So if you have other thoughts about that, and you're welcome to have that, if there's something else you'd rather do, let me know.
She's such a troublemaker.
I know.
We have to keep her separated from Representative Gilliam.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, really, have some sympathy.
Separated at birth.
We can't let the guys sit together, so I don't know what can we do.
Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you so much. All right, I close the House Committee on Human